Welcome to Highly Questionable. College football is in pretty total chaos. Bomani Jones with us here, Mina Kimes as well. Let's get started.
Will the Big Ten and Pac-12 canceling fall football sway the ACC and SEC?
All right, I can make the argument that in the history of this network, I can't put two people next to each other together who are as smart as the two people we have on this panel. And they work in sports and they are experts. And I ask you this question, it seems like a simple one. They can't answer it. Who's in charge? Who is in charge of what it is that they're watching right now? And then beyond that, are we really in a place where Nick Saban is making the argument that football is healthier than what we have happening all around us? We have a cash grab going on in this sport where you have the SEC and the ACC lined regionally and politically with their neighboring areas during a pandemic saying, let's get out there. And then we've got everyone else in disarray in some swing states where it matters that college football is played or not played for the leadership of those swing states. We've got total chaos. And the part that I find most fascinating about all of this is 5 days ago when the Big Ten said this is going to be our new schedule, and now the difference that you have in 5 days, you can make the argument that that's because some athletes have come down with heart problems, and that's the humane reason that the Big Ten decided to change its mind. But I feel that what happened in the last 5 days is the Pac-12 and the Big Ten said, give us stuff in exchange for us testing our bodies. If you're going to put a price on literally the human heart, give us stuff in exchange for that. And now you have chaos because the SEC and the ACC not asking for stuff in return, but they need to use this leverage to get stuff in return if they're going to be sent out there.
Yeah, but hold on, though. The ACC kind of sort of like the most visible player in the conference has stepped up to a front of a movement that everybody thought was we want to play at all costs and turned into, yeah, but let's talk about that a little bit, right? Like, I'm blown away with the ACC because 20 years ago, they would not have been this football first conference in the way that they are being right now. The attitude and the way that they saw themselves, they would not have been aligning with the SEC. What they've taken pride in forever is how they are not the SEC. And there they are right there pushing this through as tough as anybody else is. I really don't know exactly what the answers are to this. I do know, though, if I was a president and I had to deal with the potential liability concerns on this, guys were probably not going to play football, at least not in the fall. They got to figure out how to pay all these bills, and I understand this, but the idea that one of them would have the blood on their hands for what happens to a player or what happens to a coach while they're also trying to figure out what in the world they're going to do if there's an outbreak among the student body, I don't know where they're supposed to go on this. I would lean on the side of caution if I were them. Now, Dan, you mentioned Nick Saban and the idea that he feels like that football may be safer. Yeah, because football coaches are control freaks, and they believe that they can control the circumstances around their team, and they may be right. And I do believe that the football program around Alabama, it'll be as safe as any place is. It's probably going to be the same for Clemson. I cannot make that promise for you about all these schools because not all these schools can afford to take the precautions that are necessary to keep everybody safe. And those dudes at Alabama are really not much safer than the dudes are at Kentucky. Now, hey, everybody in the SEC may wind up having the money to pull this off, but I guarantee you in the Big 12, Texas got money that Iowa State does not have. If I'm playing for Texas, I'm not getting on the field against Iowa State.
Dan, you asked who is in charge, and I think that is the question a lot of people are getting wrong right now because we're talking about what Nick Saban is saying or Jim Harbaugh or the Ryan Days, and I get why we're doing that because we are used to them being the most important people in any room. They are the highest paid people in every room, in every state. But in this particular case, they are not the people making the decisions. It's university presidents being advised by lawyers and doctors. I cannot stress that enough, right? It doesn't matter if Nick Saban thinks it's safer in Alabama. And Bo, I agree. He might be right in his particular case. It matters that lawyers and doctors think it's not safe. Now, is it possible to convince those lawyers and doctors that football can be played safely? I don't know. But I do know that starting that process means engaging with the part of the player's statement that people seem to not want to engage to. They're very focused on the want to play without the other thing they said, which is we also want to negotiate and we want a universal health standard. And if the schools never come around on that, I don't see how we get football at any point.
Yo, think about how crazy it is that you could realistically say, can they convince the doctors? Right? Like the idea is that these guys are going to try to convince the doctors. Now, look, the doctor advising the ACC from Duke says that he thinks that football can be played safely. That is what he thinks. The problem that he's got, and this is not his fault, this is just the nature of the institutional setup. The people that are telling us that it's possible to play are the people who will make the zillions of dollars if people actually play. It makes it hard to take their word at face value. That's where we are in this. There's so much money on the line, and we're in a world that is so bereft with corruption, generally speaking. Who are you supposed to believe when they say everything is okay? Who do you trust when they say everything is okay? Because I can't think of who I do.
Well, that was an incredibly depressing segment, made all the more depressing by the fact that we dressed for a funeral today, which is really something we should talk about before the show.
Yeah, we should. We should. We didn't even get to the real depressing part. Arkansas State, they're going to start giving dudes EKGs because everybody's afraid that this thing is creating that inflammation of the heart. And I'm just looking at this and like, who's going to pay for this at all these places that have their financial issues? When they say they're testing twice a week, the question is, where's the money coming from? And if they don't have a great answer for where the money's coming from, you need to ask yourself, how much are you really testing?
How should Rob Manfred handle the Cardinals?
All right, so I thought that the most obvious example of grabbing at money and greed that we could come up with on today's show would be what we just talked about, which is putting a price tag on a young person's human heart, which is what we just did. But I give you exhibit B on the greed front, which is baseball will do whatever it can, including putting 25 janitors in uniform for the Marlins, compromising all the integrity in its results by simply getting to the money at the end of its season. So what should he do about the Cardinals? He should continue putting new Cardinals in uniform every time other Cardinals get sick, and he should punish them heavily because all they're trying to do here is get to the dollars at the end. They're talking about a bubble now for the playoffs because they see that the way that a real sport is led looks a little more like basketball instead of what happened with them. And so what you have right now is a commissioner who is under it but is going to get to those dollars at the end, and it doesn't matter if half his teams have second jobs as plumbers because they don't actually know how to play Major League Baseball. It doesn't matter if it's Major League or professional at all. All it matters is if they could cash those checks.
Manfred says there's a path forward for the Cardinals, but at this moment, they have to play 55 games in 44 days. That is not a baseball season. That is the plot of the movie Speed. You got to keep playing baseball or the bus is going to explode, right? Like, there's no way they can do that safely with the dudes they have, which is why Dan is right. The only way they can pull this off is if they do what the Marlins did and pull up a bunch of replacement guys, because ultimately this is going to be about the Cardinals making it to the postseason. It's going to be about having a postseason in the bubble that's being proposed. And who knows? Maybe they'll mess around and win a few games like Miami did. But ultimately, this isn't going to be about them.
Look, man, baseball got two options here. Hook or crook. Because whichever one it takes to get them to the end are the two that they're going to pull off. They're going to be treating them rosters like it's Family Feud. What two families? Long as we got two families, baby. Five on one side, five on the other. Steve here, cool. Let's get this thing cracking. They are going to do whatever it takes because it is insane that it could even get to a point where you would say a team has to play 55 games in 44 days and that your response to that would be, huh, well, one way or another, right? Like, no, like we hear that. That is literally impossible, right? Impossible. Every other team is going to have to be inconvenienced in the course of it. And baseball is like, what is impossible? There's no such thing. They turn into self-help gurus when a moment like this comes up. So I don't know what exactly the hell it is that they're going to do other than they're just going to keep going, right? Whatever jumps up in the road, they just going to keep going.
We're going to be talking about this months from now, and the Cardinals are going to have like 300 games that they need to play in like 7 minutes because it doesn't matter. It's just that overt. The greed is that overt, and the structural integrity of the game doesn't matter at all.
Do you think some of the people on Family Feud aren't real families? I've always wondered about this, right? Like, sometimes they're pulling in, like, you know, I got a smart second cousin. Actors.
I only know one person who has ever been on Family Feud, and it was Jalen Rose. And I knew every person who was on his family team, but I don't know anybody in his family. They were all ringers.
Wow, that's scandalous. Bomani just broke it. He broke a story.
It wasn't. I mean, Jacoby was up there. Like, it wasn't like he was trying to hide it.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Well,
right?
White person, but, you know.
Like, if Poppy got the call up, you really think he would have Dan there and not Bomani in his place? Come on.
Well, the real one is, if the Levitards got called, you really think Dan is calling Poppy and not me? I don't think Dan's trying to lose on TV.
Coming up next on my son's TV show.
The New York Rangers. The Rangers owned the first overall pick in the draft only once back in 1965 when the league was in the original six era.
The one thing that guy can't do right there.
You don't even know. I imagine it's me, right? So imagine I've got all this research. Dominique says something. I'm like, oh, I got some stats. I got some information. I am ready to bury my friend. And I start with, well, you know, James Fortin.
Highly Questionable is brought to you by Lexus. Experience amazing. Do you question if the NHL draft lottery was rigged?
All right, so the Florida Panthers here locally have been a misery for a long time. They've always been five points out of the final playoff spot. And then this year they get the play-in game that gets played out and they're not actually in the playoffs. So we don't care about hockey down here unless you tell us it's rigged. And now we go to the draft lottery, and you've got the Predators and you've got the Rangers. And look at what's happening around here, where it seems like the Rangers, in a bigger market than the Predators, seem to have a weightier ball.
Mr. Commissioner, can you confirm this is the logo of the Nashville Predators?
Nashville Predators confirmed.
The New York Rangers. The Rangers owned the first overall pick in the draft only once back in 1965 when the league was in the original six era.
The one thing that guy can't do right there is give away the game, the ball that's going to crush all the other balls. How is that possible? That's the one job that guy had. You can't have that happen.
Do we even have an answer, though, for how making the ball heavier would then make it come up to the top? Right when it was time to pick a ball, like have we carried this conspiracy all the way out? And can we talk about briefly that in a league that up until the 1960s only had six teams and the Rangers were one of them, they have won one championship in the last 80 years.
That's why it's rigged, because they're the Rangers. They're the big market. The number one draft pick is like apparently the LeBron of hockey, I'm told. Look, I think conspiracy theory culture in this country is out of control and is eroding our national trust in scientists and experts, but that was clearly rigged.
Hold on, though. I got a counterpoint for you. Yes, New York, big market. Do you know who owns the New York Rangers?
Oh, Dolan. He's a Jim great owner Dolan. In that sport.
Yeah, I hear you. All I'm saying is, if you're the league, are you going to put the next LeBron in the hands of Jim Dolan?
Mina's so right about this. Look at the shame. If that mask hadn't been on, you would have seen a pink horror sweep across that guy's face.
He did immediately feel like something had gone wrong, and I can't think of what could have possibly gone wrong. You're just dropping the ball.
Watch his eyes. Oh, you can see the moment when his soul leaves his body.
Oh, no.
Do you question which was the worst outfield play from the weekend?
All right, in much the same manner that we totally ignored that hockey has successfully executed a bubble in order to make fun of how incompetent they were at the draft, we aren't covering any baseball today. We're making fun of the Cardinals and Manfred, and we're showing you wacky outfield plays. So the first one here is Johnny Cueto has a no-hitter going, and Hunter Pence is his left fielder. Look at what Cueto does now.
He become Louis Tion.
Yeah, throwing the ball that way, and this is a no-hitter, and Hunter Pence doesn't know where it is, and that's not an error. That's a hit. That's going to be a double. And Cueto, there goes the no-hitter. And let's check in here with Aloy Jimenez. This is a different outfield. This is the White Sox, and it's the same outfield, actually. It's a left field, but ooh.
And then stuck in the
netting is no good. Yeah, that makes a double is a triple. Oh, it's an inside-the-park home run. That's not even a triple.
Wow.
Yikes.
Well, when you say home run, you mean like in the Little League sense, or is it in the box score as a home run?
Is that an error? No, that's an inside the park home run. I don't think that ends up being an error because it didn't touch his glove. Let's check in. Is this one worse here? We've got Joe Adele. Is this worse? I think this is the worst one, guys. This is the worst one. Look.
Oh, yeah. That needed a sound effect, like boop.
Yeah. Could have been worse, but only if it had bounced off of Jose Canseco's head for a home run.
Yo, and I understand why the first one was not an error, because you lose it in the lights and all this stuff. I just feel like if that were at Candlestick Park, somehow that would magically become an error. Instead, you play in at Dodger Stadium, and they're like, no hitter, over, done, right now.
Here's my question. Do you think all of this is more or less embarrassing without fans, right? Because on one hand, it's way more embarrassing to screw up like that if everybody's booing you and laughing at you and pointing fingers. But on the other hand, it might be kind of like somebody farting in an empty classroom where it's all the more dramatic and everyone kind of turns and looks at you when you make a big mistake.
Wow, that was not the analogy I was expecting there. That was a bit of a surprise there. That was a plot twist.
You know,
there's always something to be said when somebody really enunciates a word like farting. Right, because she said farting. Like, she gave us the whole thing. It was like farting in an empty classroom.
But keep in mind,
farts don't end with a G.
Here's why. Because my first time on First Take, I prepped for hours. I had all the information. I was ready to crush Dominic Foxworth. Given a question about the Rockets, and I said, James Farton.
Mina, I introduced you guys today by saying we can't have two smarter panelists with us, and that's the analogy you go to.
That's like a flower complaining about the rain. That is your life force, James Farden. Fouls run through you.
You don't even know. Imagine it's me, right? So imagine I've got all this research. Dominique says something. I'm like, oh, I got some stats. I got some information. I am ready to bury my friend. And I start with, well, you know, James Farten.
Coming up next on my son's TV show.
Do we actually believe he watches soccer? Like, I don't want to stereotype, but I just don't get like a soccer vibe from that dude. I just don't.
No, well, doesn't he live in Austin? That's a very Austin thing to do. Now, is he watching MLS soccer? Different question. I'll be watching it because they play it on ESPN.
Tonight in the bubble, the MLS is back final.
The evolution of Matthew McConaughey in front of us has been interesting, Bomani, because you're a University of Texas guy, so you probably remember that he was arrested naked playing the bongos at the University of Texas, and now he's become a guy who is a motivational speaker, getting you ready for, of all things, MLS. Look at this.
It's 1996, the beginning. It's just a dream. For the new North American soccer, it's skill. It's style. It's community. It's teams.
Wait a minute.
It's more teams.
There's
some stuff
thrown in here that isn't
it's
part
fans,
of this commercial.
Future. It's a generation.
Wait a minute.
It's movement. It's 25 years deep.
You think our soccer highlights
started.
Yeah, I noticed it. The guy getting stabbed in the esophagus. Bomani, are you intrigued?
I just want to point out that the definition of privilege is Mr. All right, all right, all right, getting to sell luxury cars, right? Like he got to go off after that and become classy. And I would just like to know, who is Lincoln advertising to? Who do you know that's got a new Lincoln? I know people with old. Who you know that's got a new one?
Mina, how about you? Are you intrigued?
Do we actually believe he watches soccer? Like, I don't want to stereotype, but I just don't get like a soccer vibe from that dude. I just don't.
No, well, doesn't he live in Austin? That's a very Austin thing to do. Now, is he watching MLS soccer? Different question. I'll be watching it because they play it on ESPN.
Me too.
Hope you guys.
I will be at home being arrested for playing the bongos nude.
Really great visual to end the show with.
Yes, disturbing.
I want to get this. I want to get that smile off my face, but I'm just stuck.
Yes, I was disturbed by it. No more time here, but if you want more Bomani Jones, The Right Time with Bomani Jones is the podcast. If you want more Mina Kimes, The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Check them both out.
James Harden complaining about fouls. That's like a flower complaining about the rain. That is your life force, James Harden. Fouls, Harden.
James Harden. James Harden. James Harden.